Visit MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Modo offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games and now introducing live blackjack, roulette, and casino hold'em. These are so much fun. Modo always has generous jackpots, free spins, and exciting promotions. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
Modo is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
MODO.US.
Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Across the board from me, Tim Dennis. And remember that next week, a zombie attack brings chaos to Harvardville Airport. Leon S. Kennedy and Claire Redfield, who fought the Sinister Umbrella Corporation during the Raccoon City tragedy 7 years ago, are back. In a high-octane Resident Evil style, they're ready to battle a rogue warrior who is seeking revenge after his family was killed in Raccoon City. The deadly G-virus is unleashed and a new mutated monster goes on the rampage. Will Claire and Leon be able to terminate the virus before history repeats itself? Find out next week when Resident Evil Degeneration, an original CG motion picture, comes out. This includes a look at the upcoming Resident Evil 5 video game and much more. We're going to be giving away copies of that DVD next week on the show, so make sure you tune in. We'll have a fun little contest for you so that you can win your copy of Resident Evil Degeneration. Our guest this evening is Brian Riggi, and he's been interested in psychic phenomena since he was a child. He's the author of 3 books on Texas ghosts and hauntings. He's also a member of the Dallas-Fort Worth Ghost Hunters and a tour guide to haunted locations in Fort Worth. Skeletal remains rotting behind cellar walls, temple priests removing brains with iron hooks, phantom locomotives roaring across midnight plains. Well, Brian Riggi isn't making this stuff up. Ghost Apparitions and Poltergeists is his new book, and it surveys 4,000 years of hauntings and ghost hunting from the embalming rituals of ancient Egypt to the Ouija boards and seances of the 19th century spiritualism, highlighting outlandish tales and colorful characters along the way. Once you've learned the history, launch a paranormal investigation of your own with Riggi's Guide to Modern Ghost Hunting, full of detailed advice culled from his 7 years of experience in the field. Go to our website at darknessradio.com. Click on the upcoming shows link. You'll see a copy of the book there. You can click the book to order your copy. Welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town, Brian Riggi. Good evening, sir.
Hey, good evening, guys. Thanks. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. Thanks for joining us. I know we had a little snafu with you last week, and I'm glad you were able to pull it together and come with us this week.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to this show.
Well, good. Thank you very much for joining us. So now you've got 7 years experience in the field, it says, with ghost hunting. What kind of started you off with your interest in the paranormal field?
Well, originally, I happily blame my parents for getting me involved in the paranormal.
Okay.
And like many of us in the field, we had experiences early on in life which led us to the interest. And, my parents traveled across Europe extensively when I was a small child. When we came back to the United States, they had all these ghost stories that they collected from their travels. And I remember they just loved to entertain their friends around the table at night with these ghost stories that they had from Germany or Italy. And I kind of grew up in that environment. And, I think that kind of sparked that initial interest on my part in the paranormal.
How old were you when you had your first paranormal experience yourself?
Well, it wasn't actually until I was an adult that I would say that I had a full-blown paranormal experience. It's just that I grew up in the environment as a child where these stories were prevalent, and they were believed by the adults. So I certainly sent us kids to bed at night, afraid of the closet and the ghost under the bed, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and for my son listening, he's just kidding. There's no ghosts under your bed or in your closet. They're all at your mom's place. I promise you're safe. Brian, when you're doing this research, do you have a specific part of your research that you enjoy the most? I mean, what was the most interesting for you to find out while you were doing all of your work?
Really, I think probably the most interesting thing is all the colorful characters involved in the history of ghost hunting and the paranormal. Doing the research, all these stories come alive to you. You read about, Harry Price and Harry Houdini and some of the more contemporary ghost hunters like the Warrens and the guys from Taps and just the stories behind their lives and their experiences and adventures is just just really, you know, thrilling.
Well, let's start off with a book that you've written. Now, you've written three books regarding haunted Texas. What are some of your favorite locations throughout that state that you've investigated and done research on?
Well, I think one of my favorite places is the Hotel Lawrence in Dallas. It's in downtown Dallas. And it's an old 1925 hotel that's still in use today. Very, very beautiful hotel with a lot of really great history. You know, you had things going on from the Prohibition era there and, you know, hidden gambling parlors and, you know, liquor runs, that kind of stuff. And it's just a wonderful, beautiful hotel. And the staff is very open to having people come in and kind of explore the history and the paranormal side of the hotel as well. And one of the things that happened, I was with a group called DFW Ghost Hunters, and we were conducting an investigation one evening of the hotel, and it was the first time that I actually saw an object move by itself.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, which when you see it, is totally mind-blowing.
What did you see move?
Well, we were in on the 10th floor in the presidential suite, and a man had committed suicide there in the 1950s.
Okay.
And there were a lot of stories connected with the room about an entity residing in the room that always made people that stayed there very uncomfortable. And we were conducting an EVP session, an electronic voice phenomenon session, and we had our camera set up, and we had an EMF meter set up on the bed in the room in which the man had committed suicide. During the session, we were asking the spirit questions and asking it to show a sign of its presence. And right in front of us, it didn't move much, but a good, 6 or 7 inches, that EMF meter moved slowly across the bed. It was really, really exciting.
Wow, very cool. Now, did you guys, do you back it up with a lot of EVP work, other video evidence that you've been able to show as well?
Yes. I mean, we caught it on camera, and we didn't get anything on the audio recorders, actually, that night, other than the investigator who was standing next to it got so excited that we had to bleep out some of his exclamations.
Yeah, it always gets
the audio track.
That always seems to draw some of the more colorful language, doesn't it, when things start moving around on you?
It does. And, you know, you go into a situation, and you have it in your head how you're going to react when you're actually confronted with something. And then when you are, it's entirely different than what you thought your response would be.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I laugh. You know, we're friends with the guys from the Ghost Adventures show. And people are like, oh, those idiots, they taunt, and then all of a sudden they take off screaming and running. Well, you know, mm-hmm. you think you're cool until you're standing there, and all of a sudden something, you know, a brick throws itself across the room. You know, and all these people that are Monday morning quarterbacks and sit there telling you how, oh, I would have faced it, and this is what I would... You know, it's real easy to sit there and say that until you're actually in the situation yourself and facing something that's just freaky.
It is, absolutely.
I think you'd be less human, you know, not being able to check that out. You know, I mean, your response should be more of a fight-or-flight nature, I would guess.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it reminds me of the story that I like to tell. And the first time I actually went ghost hunting, I decided, you know, I was very inexperienced, didn't know anything about the field. I decided that I was going to go ghost hunting, and I was going to catch a ghost. So I went to the store and got my, you know, Walmart disposable camera and went out to the local cemetery, Oakwood Cemetery, which had a long history and a very, very beautiful cemetery. And, you know, I said, well, I'm going to capture an image of a ghost this evening. And so I have all the stereotypes in my head. Cemetery, 12 o'clock at night, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And I'm working my way through the cemetery, and it's this huge cemetery that just seems to go on forever. And it's classic. Full moon, 12 o'clock is approaching, and I'm by myself, which, of course, is a no-no in most cases.
Right.
But I'm going through there with my disposable camera and my flashlight, and the legend behind the haunting of Oakwood Cemetery is that a woman in a white dress can be seen at night moving through the tombstones, and she hollers out. She lets out this terrible shriek at night and chases people out of the cemetery. So I'm going through the tombstones, and I've got my flashlight, and believe it or not, from across the cemetery, I see this white figure moving towards me. And at that point, you suddenly have to stop and say, okay, am I actually ready for this? Is this really what I want to do?
All right.
And then the figure gets closer and closer and closer. And I'm just
of course, being a good investigator, you're snapping away pictures left and right, correct?
No, actually, I wasn't. I think I was shaking a little bit. And it got closer, and suddenly it lets out this terrible wail. And I just start laughing. What had happened was a cow had entered the cemetery at night and was eating the grass in the cemetery, saw me standing off to the side, got scared, bellowed out, and took off across the cemetery.
So what they thought was a figure in white was just the white splotches on the cow?
It was a white cow.
Oh, white cow.
These cows had been getting into the cemetery and, you know, mooing at night, and people thought that they were actually apparitions.
Really?
Scared me to death.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, well, you know, and that's what we find so much in these investigations are, it's the buildup that you're expecting, and then when you find out what's actually there, you know, I know growing up in Chicago, Resurrection Cemetery, which is known for its white ghost, white-cloaked ghost, Resurrection Mary.
Resurrection Mary, yes.
So many sightings are seen in the cemetery of what was called ghost lights for a long time. These lights that would appear to dance throughout the cemetery as you would drive by, and it wasn't till a while later when people realized it was nothing more than oncoming headlights reflecting off of the gravestones that would make them appear to bounce from angles.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember growing up hearing all the people that were perplexed by that whole situation.
Oh, yeah, and I remember that as well because, you know, I originated from Chicago.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
When did you hightail it to Texas?
About 2000 is when I came to Texas.
Really?
I graduated from DePaul University there in Chicago.
Okay. Did you ever take like the Richard Crow ghost tours or any of those?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. I mentioned that. That was like one of the things that really started getting the juices going for me when I started going out and realized that they were actually doing tours and you mm-hmm. could go to these haunted locations and somebody would tell you all the ghost stories about them, which is to me always fascinating. Our guest is Brian Riggi, talking about fascinating. He's got a great book that's out and it is available everywhere right now. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
And it's called Ghosts, Apparitions, and Poltergeist. We'll be back with more, and we'll take your questions if you have questions for Brian as well as we go along. We'll be back with more Paranormal Talk Radio right here on Darkness Radio. Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening, Brian Riggi. Brian, talk to us a little bit more about the books that you've written. Where are some of the other more popular haunted spots that you actually feel? I mean, I know every city and every state has got famous haunted locations.
Uh-huh.
And when we actually get there, you know, they're just really more legend and lore than they are fact. Of the locations that you've investigated, what would you say are a couple more of your favorite, really well-known and actually documented haunted locations?
Well, I would say that probably one of the most famous sites, of course, in Texas is the Alamo in San Antonio.
Yes.
And, you know, given the history of the battle of the Alamo that occurred and many of the things that happened afterwards with the mass burials of the soldiers on what then became, you know, buildings and plazas that make up San Antonio's tourist district, it probably is one of the most fascinating places that I've been as far as having really name recognition. Also, the USS Lexington is...
Now, tell us a little bit about... Now, it's funny. You know, I had approached the Alamo about a year and a half ago about doing a live event there.
Uh-huh.
We actually got approval to do the event, but I couldn't advertise that it was going to be at the Alamo, and I could not allow anybody to videotape or take okay. photographs of the location during the ghost hunt. So I had to politely decline because I said it was hard to advertise in a ghost hunt in an undisclosed location in Texas.
Exactly.
And not be able to photograph or videotape it when that's two of the most popular versions of ghost hunting techniques. So we had to pass on doing that. But what are the actual stories that go on there?
Well, I mean, stories existed from, you know, from the very time that the Alamo, the Battle of the Alamo, actually, you know, one of the most popular legends is that Santa Anna left a general and some troops behind. He wanted to totally demolish the Alamo, so there'd be nothing left standing of it. And he went on to chase Houston across Texas, and they did their thing. But the legend is that the soldiers returned to the Alamo the next day and were determined to tear it down and were confronted by spirits of dead soldiers, and they ran off. And this occurred several different times. Each time the soldiers approached the Alamo, they were chased off by the phantoms of soldiers until eventually they abandoned their idea of tearing it down completely.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And what else? I mean, do they ever see any famous ghosts wandering the location?
They see what? I'm sorry?
Do they ever see any famous ghosts?
There haven't been, as far as I know, any actual, for the famous personalities like David Crockett or Jim Bowie that they've seen. Most of them have been vaguer apparitions, a lot of sounds. There's a lot of disembodied voices that have been heard, dark figures up on the wall of the Alamo on the top, phantom sounds, those sort of things. But nothing really like, you know, we saw, you know, David Crockett, you know, in the back of the Alamo kind of thing.
Okay. All right. Well, now how about a couple more haunted big shot locations there in Texas?
Well, USS Lexington is very famous in Texas for being haunted. You know, it's an aircraft carrier, and Taps actually did a show on there.
Right.
One evening. It was pretty exciting, and that has a long history. And it's actually pretty neat because they will allow groups to go in and stay the night.
Now, have you actually investigated it yourself?
I haven't done an investigation with a group per se, but I've gone in and spoken with the director who's given me a tour and taken photographs and done a lot of research and history on it.
All right. And how about a couple more?
Well, one of my favorite places is really not that famous, but it's had a lot of activity. It's called Carter Ghost Town.
Okay.
Carter Ghost Town lies probably about 14 miles northeast of the Fort Worth-Dallas Metroplex area. And it's a town that sprang up in the late 1800s. And when the railroads bypassed it years later, it kind of withered away. People left. They went to other towns. Shops burned down. Failed. And over time, the only thing that was left remaining were several smaller structures and a bunch of ruined foundations. And in this area, it's become a very popular place for ghost hunters to go to because of all the activity that seems to transpire there at night. I've been out there a number of times and just gotten some amazing things, especially with EVPs at the site.
Oh, really?
Yes.
How about the quality of the EVPs? What kind of EVPs are you getting? A, B, C?
It was very, very good quality. One of the ones that was the most astounding, we were in what was left of the schoolhouse, and historically, it was a town that had been attacked several times by Indians. It had a long history of skirmishes between the settlers and Indians in that area, and several children were abducted from the school one day. From the town, and we were in the school, and we were doing an EVP session. We had our audio equipment set up. It's probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, and this is really way out in the country, so there's not anybody around. We did our EVP session, and then later when we ran it through the filtering processes on the computer, we came across the sound of a young girl's voice. And during the EVP session, one of the investigators was singing the ABC song, you know, A, B, C, D, to kind of
maybe
stimulate some kind of activity. And when we played it back, there was a small, what sounded like a little girl's voice in the background, kind of mimicking it. He'd go A, B, C, D, and you'd hear E, F, G, and that was kind of creepy.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the book that you've got out now. And now, again, for newbie listeners that are not real familiar with the paranormal, we were just talking about EVPs. That stands for electronic voice phenomena. That is the recording of disembodied voices that you don't necessarily hear audibly when you're asking the questions, but your recorder seems sensitive enough to pick up. you investigate apparitions, ghosts, poltergeists. Why don't you give us a breakdown? What are the differences between those so that the newer listeners that that are just joining us understand what that all means?
Sure. Well, one of the things is ghosts and apparitions are often lumped into the same category. And there's really subtle differences between the two. Apparition can be the image or hallucination of some type, whether it's audible or visual or tactile, of an object, of a person, of an animal. There have been reports of apparitions of vehicles, people, horses, even buildings.
Right. And see, that to me is strange. You know, that leads you to believe that there definitely is more to the geometric principles of a location, that if it's able to retain the idea of what was there prior. Now, have you heard of any locations where, you know, they see a ghost house? Because, like, I know one of the famous stories from Illinois at the Bachelor Grove Cemetery is on the way up there, people have taken photographs and caught a picture of a house in the photograph, but it seems to appear in different locations.
Yes, and there are stories throughout history of phantom houses, and there's this often told tale of a traveler who's looking for a friend's house, and they walk up to a farmhouse, and they knock on the door, and nobody answers, or somebody comes around and says that the friend's house that they're looking for is up the road. And when the traveler gets to the friend's house, they say, yes, the guy down the road in the big farmhouse gave me directions, and the homeowner says, well, there's nobody down there. There's no house. And the traveler goes back, and there's nothing there but an empty field.
Really?
Kind of a reoccurring theme that's been told over and over again.
Now, where have you found stories of that in Texas or around the United States and around the world?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Around both the United States and in Europe. I've come across tales of that.
Now, what is the difference between a ghost and a poltergeist?
Well, poltergeists seem to kind of, many of the manifestations during a poltergeist, what's known as a poltergeist infestation, mimic what happens during a classic haunting. During a poltergeist infestation, you can get apparitions. You can get moving objects, voices, what seems like an intelligent being communicating with you. Poltergeists, you know, one of the popular theories today about poltergeists is that it's repressed psychokinetic energy from what is known as an agent. And the difference between ghosts and poltergeists is ghosts and apparitions are often associated with a place or an object, whereas poltergeists are often associated with an individual person in the home. So when the person leaves the home, goes somewhere else, the poltergeist activity moves with that person or with that agent.
Now, I'm curious, and if we have any engineers out there listening or people that understand this more that would be willing to call in and answer this for me, I'm just curious, is there a way that we can, you know, and we can test for our temperature, we can test for all types of different things, is there a way that we can measure the PK or psychokinetic energy around a person? And if so, is there a way that we could test when there's poltergeist activity going on? Is there a way to test individual family members to see? I know the theory is always around the fact that if there's especially like a prepubescent teenage girl in the house, it seems to anchor itself around her and that they think it's just her innate psychic ability throwing things around and creating a conduit to energize what's going on in the house normally. I wonder if there's a way to measure that. If there's anybody out there that does engineering or has an understanding of the energy fields and if there's a way to read that, I'd love for you to give us a call at 651-989-5855 and let us know about that. Brian, we'll come back. We'll do some more with you. We got to take a quick break and do a quick news update. So stay tuned. And if you're out there listening to us driving, please, please, please drive safely. We are under a winter storm advisory? Tim?
Winter weather advisory.
Winter weather advisory. And it goes through till 6 o'clock tomorrow night. So please only drive if you have to. Stay home. Stay safe. The holidays are right around the corner, and there's no need to go out for anything stupid. So be safe. Listen to Darkness Radio and all of our friends. Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim Dennis, co-host and producer with me this evening. And our guest is Brian Riggi, and he is the author of Ghosts, Apparitions, and Poltergeist. before we went to the break, we were talking about the differential?
Yeah, the differential in your car.
Yeah, exactly. Which is out in my truck and being replaced this week,
well, as a matter of fact.
Yes, but we were talking about the differences, is what I meant to say, between apparitions, ghosts, and poltergeist. Doing the research for your book, how often do you find what people consider to be a haunting to be nothing more than just a poltergeist activity or the the off throw of this kinetic energy?
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you look at the poltergeist phenomenon through the ages, it has often been misdiagnosed as something else many times before. In cases like the drummer of Tedworth, which was a very famous case in England, there was a poltergeist activity in a home, which was attributed to demonic spirits. Early on, what you often find as poltergeist activity today could easily be associated with what was reported to surround certain women who were accused of witchcraft and tortured in prison or burned at the stake.
Okay.
And so you have the cycle where, you know, at first it was demonized, and then I think poltergeists were often then, as times change, thought to be part of a haunting or a ghost. And then now today, with our modern views, the poltergeist has once again become something else. And it's interesting to think that, you know, when our views change again, what the poltergeist phenomenon will be thought of to be.
No doubt. Now, with this book, what are some of your favorite cases that you did research on for this book?
Well, this book, it really, I mean, it covers such an expanse. I mean, you know, it's an overview of man's fascination with the supernatural throughout history, from, you know, the very first ghost story that's thought to exist in the Gilgamesh epic on cuneiform tablets in Babylon, in ancient Babylon. That talked about ghosts and spirits. And it kind of goes from there, and it kind of gives a cultural overview of man's beliefs and even fear and death and dying and burial practices throughout time, all the way to the spiritualist movement in America in the 19th century.
Well, why don't you start off, for a lot of the people who don't know, can you tell us a little bit about the first recorded ghost stories?
Well, the first one that was thought to exist was, like I said, was the Gilgamesh epic, and it was written on cuneiform tablets found in ancient Babylon, but to be around, I think it was like 2500 BC. And these tablets told the story of Gilgamesh, this heroic figure who went through the land fighting gods and demons, and he's kind of like this Herculean figure with all these tasks that he had to do. And one of them, his friend dies. Akito was his friend. And he makes a deal with the gods in order to see his friend one more time. So they open up this hole in the ground, and the ghost of his friend comes up, and he talks, and he tells him about what the afterlife was supposed to be like to the Babylonians at the time, of course. And you know, it's fascinating because you even find references to ghosts in the Judeo-Christian Bible.
Right.
Today, you find many of them. Yeah.
Now, what do you think when researching the spiritualist movement and what's going on in our, I don't know, global consciousness right now? Do you see a lot of similarities to why the popularity of the paranormal is so big and on such a rise at this point?
Mm-hmm. Well, it may have seemed that it has changed some because of the different terminology that we use, the different technology that we use, even. But the spiritualist movement of the 19th century is you know, not very different from, you know, our ghost shows of today. I mean, they served the same function, basically. I mean, they, you know, many
right, but do you see a lot of correlation? Or has there, you know, I guess a lot of us are under the conception that, you know, there was that spiritualist movement, which then died down. And then, you know, it seems to be resurfacing again over the last decade here, very strong. You know, you wouldn't talk about ghosts and mediums as openly. You know, it's almost like an embarrassment with the Psychic Friends Network that you could, visit. But now people are very open with the fact that they seek tarot readers and psychics and mediums and seek help, and they all watch these TV shows. And, I mean, it's slipping into mainstream all the time, you know, where it was an occasional movie for scare. Now you've got Supernatural on TV on the CW, you've got Medium on NBC, Ghost Whisperer on CBS. Every cable channel seems to have a ghost show now. Do you think that it was always there, or is it cyclical, as you're finding in your research?
Oh, I definitely think it's cyclical. I think today, you know, the media is responding to a desire amongst, this grassroots movement of ghost hunters that have sprung up over the last 10, 15 years, and it's reaching its peak now, and it seems to be almost everywhere. I mean, who hasn't seen, a ghost hunting show?
Right. Now, do you see a correlation, though, between the original spiritualist movement and, what's been going on now for, like, the last 7 years?
Oh, I do, because what you have to understand about the spiritualist movement of the 19th century was it was very much always in the press. Each week you had some new medium that was popping up in the press that the papers were touting about their particular abilities, their ability to communicate with spirits or levitate. And then you would have, debunkers come along and debunk them, and then that would be, it was a big soap opera, basically, in the news at the time.
So that was the original, Ghost Hunters, was all of the crazy stuff going on. Back then,
it really was, yeah.
Do you find a ribbon of something that was going on during that time? Was it, right now we're in a culture of war and attack here. I've noticed that it's been on the rise since 9/11, this interest in the paranormal and what comes next. Was it that we opened up spiritually again on 9/11, and that's what opened us up? And was there a similar catalyst to that in the 19th century?
Well, there was. I mean, any time there was a major conflict, like especially right after World War I, where people were dealing with these massive casualties. I mean, entire towns were dealing with the loss of somebody in their home during the war in Europe, and that need for that turning more towards the spiritual side, caused a resurgence at that time. An interest in that. And I think any time that you find a society that's stressed out by something like that, or questioning, issues of loss or mortality, things of that nature, spiritualism, ghost hunting, all these topics, spring back up as people turn towards them looking for answers.
All right, we're going to take our last break of the evening. We'll come back and we'll do a little bit of wrap up here with you. Our guest is Brian Riggi, and his book, which is out right now, you can go to our website and check it out. Go to the upcoming show section at darknessradio.com. You'll see the book Ghost Apparitions and Poltergeist. Click on it. It'll take you to the site. You can order it. Do you have a website people can check out, Brian?
Yeah, it's brianriggi.com.
And that's BRIANRIGHI.com. Check it out for more information on Brian and on his books. We'll be back with more Paranormal Talk Radio. Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim Dennis across the board from me. Check out our website, darknessradio.com. If there's guests you'd like to hear on our show, different topics that you think we should cover, from voodoo to witchcraft to ghosts, the Bermuda Triangle and beyond, let us know. You can email me at dave@darknessradio.com, or you can email Tim at tim@darknessradio.com. If you have news stories you'd like our reporters to report on, you can go to the news desk at darknessradio.com and send emails to Adrian or to Bree. There's also a link there for Tech Talk with Bill Murphy. If you have new paranormal investigative equipment that you'd like him to research and investigate, he will be more than happy to do that. If you've created new equipment, he'll also take a look at it and report about it on the show. So you can reach out to any one of them. And with the mention of Bill Murphy, I just want to go out and say that, Bill, our thoughts and prayers are with you and your lovely fiance, Anita McMillan. Anita suffered a fall about 15, 16 days ago. Anita is a hemophiliac and broke several bones in her body, which If you're not familiar with being hemophiliac, it means you don't stop bleeding. You have problems clotting, but it also broken bones are toxic to hemophiliacs. So it's been very touch and go. She is in USC Medical Center, and we're just asking for prayers and healing and energy, Reiki, anything you can pour out for Anita McMillan in California at USC Medical Center. You can also call her, even if you don't know her. Give her a call. Cheer her up. She's going to be in the hospital for the next week or so. Let her know that you're thinking about her. It's going to be a long, tough road to hoe, and we want to let her know that our thoughts and prayers are with her from Darkness Radio. Bill, we'll miss you. We'll have you back on the show as soon as things are settled down enough for you. We're going to go back to our guest tonight is Brian Riggi. And Brian, let's talk a little bit more about some of the history that you found most interesting when you were putting this book together.
Well, I mean, you know, once again, one of the things I found fascinating were the colorful characters involved in it. Anywhere from the early churchmen who first started to investigate some of these things to some of the more flamboyant mediums like Douglas Hume, 19th century, to some of the big debunkers like Harry Houdini, who most people just kind of know him as the famous escape artist. But he actually did a great deal of the medium fraudulent medium debunking during that time as well.
And well, it was kind of nearing the end of his career, wasn't it, as he had everybody was starting to reproduce his illusions and his escape act. So he actually started to focus, especially after the death of his mother. He became obsessed with trying to communicate with her and realized that he was being scammed by all of these so-called spiritualists and mediums. And he went on a quest. He used to actually dress up in costume when he'd go to different towns to meet with mediums and psychics to try to bust them. And he would bust them during the actual deal. And there was only one that he really had. He hated her. I can't remember her name. And he had a bitch of a time trying to bust her on air or on live
investigation. Marjorie Crandon.
Right. And he would never concede that she was had any kind of ability. But he could reproduce. That was pretty amazing. He could reproduce in a live setting just about anything that these people were able to do.
Exactly. And he would go to great lengths to disguise himself. He would dress up as an old man with a beard and a cane, and he would hobble into these seances. And, you know, during the middle of the seance, when he had the trick figured out, he would jump up and reveal it, and then he would walk outside where he would usually have reporters waiting for him to cover the story all of a sudden. So pretty exciting stuff.
Was there anybody that you researched that surprised you that was into the paranormal and were researching it?
That surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go through it, and you're like you said, a lot of people didn't know that aspect of Harry Houdini. Was there anybody in there that you thought, oh, my, you know, the church took this a lot more seriously than I thought, or this or that? You know, was there anything along those lines in your research that really kind of surprised you to find out?
Well, the church, you know, took it very seriously. You know, in the early days of the church, when they would first open up a new church building, they had particular incantations that they would go through in Latin that was supposed to dispel what they called knocking spirits or spirit raps at the time. And that really surprised me, especially given, you know, the church's position on it today many times.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange situation that people do this, and it seems the church accepts it. You know, I mean, I know my pastor, when I attended Brooklyn Park Lutheran Church, used to tell me that he would be called in a lot on ghosty cases and things that would be involved. And, you know, it's funny that the churches all seem to kind of fend off, oh, it's just silliness, but so many of the pastors and priests and ministers are on call to do these clearings and prayer requests over homes that are haunted all the time. And now with the advent of actually the Pope coming out and saying, yeah, it's okay, it's not a sin now to believe in UFOs and aliens, it does seem that the church is opening up a lot more to the view of the supernatural and paranormal.
Yeah, and it's probably a direct response to the growing phenomenon of the movement today. You know, the church was conservative about the issue when society was conservative about the issue.
Was there any of the cases that you did that involved poltergeist cases that really, I know you said it's more of an overview, but was there one that really stuck with you most that just made you, you know,
Well, the Enfield poltergeist haunting is one of the most famous poltergeist hauntings in history. And it involved a family. It involved a mother and three or four small children who, in Enfield, England, were plagued by poltergeist activity. It's something that appeared a great deal in the press at the time. In the London Mirror, it really had a lot of play.
And when did this take place?
This was in the 70s.
Okay.
This was in the mid to late 70s when this occurred. And one of the interesting things about this was that from the very beginning, the both the Society of Psychical Research in London and the London Press were kind of brought in from the very beginning to cover this case. And this is a case that lasted for months, and it was extensive testing by parapsychologists in the home dealing with the poltergeist phenomenon. There's lots of photographs and data, the capturing of moving objects on film. It was pretty well covered. It really was.
Was there, you know, I know you just mentioned some of the things that went on, like the moving of things now, and it went on for months. What, did the church take an official stance on that?
In this particular case, the church kind of backed away from it, and they didn't really get involved too much in this one. So, yeah, they kind of stayed away from this one.
All right. We've got about 2 minutes left. What would you like to share with people in the last couple of minutes of the show that you'd like people to know about you, about your books, and about the research that you do?
Well, I just think, you know, it's really important for people who become involved in the ghost hunting movement or in the field to kind of learn a little bit about those that came before them, the history of the subject. It's important if you're going to be involved in this field, I think, to learn from the mistakes that have been made before.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And again, people can reach out to you and contact you, email you with their ghost stories and with questions. They can find you at brianriggi.com.
Yes, okay. Yes, absolutely.
And again, that's spelled BRIANRIGHI.com. Brian, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us here this evening, and I wish you much success with the book. When you come out with a new book, we'd love for you to come forward and talk to us a little bit about that as well.
Absolutely. I really appreciate being on tonight, and you guys stay warm up there because I know you guys are getting hit pretty hard.
Yeah, it's brutal out here. We will. You keep safe as well, and happy holidays to you and your family, sir.
Okay, have a great evening.
Thank you. You too. And remember, folks, the name of the book is called Ghosts, Apparitions, and Poltergeist. The book surveys over 4,000 years of hauntings and ghost huntings from the embalming rituals of ancient Egypt to the Ouija boards and seances of the 19th century spiritualism, highlighting outlandish tales and colorful characters along the way.
Absolutely. And lots of good topics in that book and a lot of interesting subjects. Spanning the kind of the whole cosmos of the paranormal.
Yeah, the whole gambit. So, again, once you've learned the history, launch a paranormal investigation of your own with Riggi's Guide to Modern Ghost Hunting, full of detailed advice culled from his 7 years of experience in the field. You can get this book at any major bookseller across the United States. Check it out. Stay tuned. We got a great guest coming up for us, the first time on Darkness Radio. We have Leslie Rule is joining us, and she's the best-selling author of 2 suspense novels and 4 nonfiction books on ghosts. Her new book, Ghost in the Mirror, Real Cases of Spirit Encounters. When we come back, you're listening to the best of Paranormal Talk Radio.
It's time to play big on Moto Social Casino, America's hottest free-to-play social casino experience. Moto.us has live casino games. It's time! Play big, win bigger on Moto.us today.
Moto is a social casino, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Visit Moto.us for more details.
It's time!
Moto.us.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.